Welcome to the Weird Science Podcast. I'm Justin.
And I'm Shane.
And you are listening to the podcast where comedians explore everything weird about silence, science. Mm-hmm. Today, unlocking the monster in your head.
Ooh.
The story of the science behind the Loch Ness Monster.
Okay, there's actual science.
There is science that we're going to delve into. Really glad to be here. Thank you all for listening. Thanks especially to our patrons who give us a little extra hard-earned money each month, and so we give them more and more content. So thank you guys so much for doing that. It really means a lot to us.
So thank you so much. And also, if you aren't a patron or you're not a Spotify premium, it's $5 a month, and you get a back catalog of all our old podcasts, Conspiracy Beat Me, if you want to listen to that. Usually about 4 episodes extra a month.
So, yeah, absolutely. On that note, you should, if you are a patron or not, you should come see us live.
Oh, yeah.
Or particularly, you should come see Shane.
Oh,
live.
Well, we're both going to be live.
Well,
let's see.
We have a show coming up.
We do. Is that the 16th of September?
Yeah, what is that show?
Is that Mark Brady's show?
Yeah.
Yeah, Mark Brady at King's, his album recording.
If you're in the Raleigh area, it'll be September 16th.
Yep.
We'll be at King's. I know Shane and I both have some bigger shows coming up in October and November.
Yeah.
We should probably do a live show at some point.
I think we should.
If there's enough people, if you're out there and you'd come to a live show in the Raleigh area, give us a note. We'll plan one.
Yeah, we could do that at Good Nights. And I think the one you were mentioning earlier, October 26th, I'll be doing a show at Good Nights. All me, baby.
Yeah.
And maybe
the
friends.
Shane Smith show.
We'll see what happens. I think I was a little drunk when I agreed.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. That's the best time to agree to do stuff.
I spent the day. I've been trying to work on a little bit every day. I've had 2 days so far. But today I just went back and watched all my old clips and felt real horrible.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah. Man. But I was like, God, I need to fill time. What do I got from 34 years ago?
No. it's going to be Shane's an incredible entertainer beyond comedy.
Thank you.
Make sure you're there for that. Other than that, we're still comics. We're still talking about science. And today, we dig into something that we've covered a long, long time ago here in this house with our former co-host, Sam Mazzani.
Oh, wow.
It was about probably the most famous cryptid in the world, which, of course, is the Loch Ness Monster.
Old Nessie.
And the reason that it's back today is because it was in April of 1933 that the modern Loch Ness Monster came to be first spotted.
So there was one before?
Well,
like a new Coke situation?
Yeah, yes, COVID, yeah. Mm-hmm. There are writings that date back to 500 AD. There was some saint who encountered a watery beast.
Oh, wow.
In Loch Ness. Okay. There are other stories of large serpents in that area. I think it's easy, 1,500 years after something, to dismiss a sighting that occurred.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Somehow, we don't take ancient people for their word.
Yeah, why is that? Because I don't know.
They're not going to take us for our word either.
No, they're not, yeah.
They're going to be like, they're going to read about us flying in planes. And they're like, well, they didn't literally fly.
No, they didn't have, giant beasts under them?
No, they mean they were birds and in their minds they flew.
Yes,
they were dreaming. Yeah,
like, such dumb peoples.
We don't think that anyone told the truth.
No.
I will say, reading some of the old religious accounts, a giant beast approached and I fell to my knees and prayed to Lord God and I rose to be 75 feet tall. And you're like,
You're just on mushrooms, dude.
Yeah.
Or they're the ones where like there was a bush on fire and then it talked to me. Mm-hmm. I'm like, they're okay.
Those are easier to dismiss, I think.
Yeah. Maybe there were a some sort of animal that looked like a bush that was always on fire and they talked and they were just like roams. They were just like the buffalo back in the day. And it wasn't uncommon to talk to a bush.
I think a lot of times you're just like you're you're banging your buddy's girl. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh shit, my husband's coming, and he just
quick, get an excuse.
Get in this bush. And then you're like, he's coming to the bush. And you're like, light it on fire. And then he's like, go back to the people and tell them adultery is wrong, except when it's my friend, John.
Yeah, that sounds accurate.
And then it's like, I think there's a lot of hootenannies. Is that the right word?
I don't know. Hootenannies a fun time. I don't know.
Well, shenanigans.
There's
a lot of shenanigans going on in that old religious stuff. The modern Nessie, maybe shenanigans, pretty erstwhile couple, okay. 1933. And they were at a hotel and they spotted a large creature on the surface of Loch Ness, and they reported it. That eventually made its way to a reporter with, I think, the Inverness.
Oh yeah, Times. Yeah, that would sound about right.
And he reported it. Didn't give much credit to the woman who saw it first. So kind of the good old days.
Yeah, it's like, that's a bummer.
I saw a monster. You're a woman.
Yeah, are you sure?
Probably in a fit of lunacy because it's that time of the month.
Yeah, we'll need a man to confirm this.
Yeah, so luckily for history, at least, not for equal rights, her husband was there with her.
Oh, thank God.
So they took, oh, well, spot on, gentlemen. Well, I'll take your word for it. Yeah. So it was reported. Now that, the birth of the modern Loch Ness mythology is now 90 years old this year.
Oh, wow.
In August, this past weekend, was the largest Loch Ness search in over 50 years.
Okay.
They brought in hundreds of people. Now, let's be real. Hundreds isn't a lot.
No, but that was five towns.
I mean, back then, yeah. And honestly, it was a bit of a... It was a bit of a cryptid party. It was a bit of like, you know, if you're a nerd, mm-hmm. Which I mean that with all due love and respect, if you're a nerd and you like Loch Ness, you went for the party. There's probably a lot of kinky stuff going on. Probably like Loch Ness after hours.
Probably
like a burlesque show where Sasquatch comes out. Yeah. He's got more than big feet. Let's just say that.
Yeah, way. Watch out.
So they had this big to-do, this big gathering. Interesting note put on by the Loch Ness Center. Loch Ness Center now housed in the very hotel where the sighting happened in 1933.
Huh, seems like a way to maybe just bring people to your...
maybe, look.
To your club.
There is a pretty good indication that a lot of this paranormal sightings, cryptids, is really just a deep cut of tourism.
Right.
It's like reverse Scooby-Doo.
Right.
Right. Scooby-Doo, if you don't know, Scooby-Doo was a 80s cartoon where these kids got in a van and solved really, really complicated, like, gentrification real estate fraud.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it was always a guy who wanted to buy some land cheap and was trying to drive out people.
Yeah, so and evade taxes and get rid of the locals.
Yeah, so he always kind of like in the most complicated way possible would invent a mythology, leave clues that only the gang could find.
Yeah.
And but this is like the opposite. Like, you create Mothman.
Oh, right.
And then you have Mothman Festival, and it's a huge...
You're the lamp for those people.
Is there like a movie that's like this where like somebody creates a fake?
Oh, probably.
I think that's a great plot for a movie.
Yeah, that would be good. Let's start one now.
Yeah, you make up a cryptid and you got to plan it because it's good for tourism.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that is a movie. Or maybe it's a Broadway play or something.
Oh, nice. We should look into that.
Bat Boy and Cave. That might be what...
That's the Broadway play for sure.
But I wonder if that's what it all comes down to is like a...
Just a grift.
Just a grift to get tourism.
It's not a bad one.
Well, that, I mean,
some
that,
people buy better food for the restaurant or change their menu, but people are like, "Why would we just get a snake boy?"
Yeah, right. Yeah. No sense in having a good place to hang. Just have something you might see. A few deaths.
Yeah, that's all you need.
You just need a few, a few people that are like, "Hey, I'm 75. I'm gonna die at some point.
Yeah,
put some fangs in me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Drop me out of the sky with like bats attached to my skin and just like let the rumors begin. Yeah. For the good of the town.
You could also just lie about it in the newspaper without killing a man. You can just...
It's not killing. He's volunteering.
I know,
man.
But you could still do it without a mess.
Well, I'm just saying, some people need to give up. we'll talk a little bit about the tourism aspect again when we get into the thick of it. But suffice it to say that after 1933, and I would say for the past 90 years, Loch Ness fever, Nessie fever, has persisted. Mm-hmm. It seems like every time it dies down, a new sort of sighting or revived. Yeah. If there was a period of time when people thought that if there was a Loch Ness monster, that it died.
Oh, sure. That makes sense.
And, but then there was a revival of sightings. I mean, since the first sighting, several universities have launched expeditions, sonar expeditions, and many of them were able to detect something large underwater. So we do have, and if you look at the evidence of Loch Ness, I mean, there are large sonar readings of objects. Many people think, well, that's just a school of fish.
Oh, right, yeah.
They could do be swim something together. Else.
On their way to class.
In 1975, there was a photograph and sonar that did show a vaguely giant flipper of an aquatic animal. Oh,
okay.
That's the very famous flipper photo. The most famous photo that most people...
Black and white one, right?
The black and white one where the thing's going in the water.
Yeah, it's like a little... looks like a little L shape coming out of the water.
L. Yeah. And then if you were to see that thing with perspective, that little L is about the size of a flute.
Really?
It's
pretty tiny.
Yeah, one of the people that took that photograph on their deathbed. Mm-hmm. I mean, what a deathbed confession.
Yeah.
Hey kids, come here, I gotta tell you one thing.
Guess what?
For 60 years we deceived the world into thinking, you know, like yeah, yeah. He gave up the ghost at the very end just to get it off his chest.
Who's using flute for measurement size? Like, who's that familiar with a flute?
I used me.
Okay, so 2 out of 3 so far. How many people actually know flute distance? What is it, 3 feet?
Well, no, I'm just saying, I don't think that you, I'm just saying I've heard it described as a flute-sized object.
Okay, but I guess.
I mean, like, you know, a foot long, kind of small, but if you, but like what they did is they had a photograph and it was something jumping in the water.
Oh.
And their foot or their, like part of their tail was sticking out. And they were like, oh, like, if you look at just that, it looks like Loch Ness. And so they cut the photograph.
Oh.
So it looks like you're looking at Loch Ness a long way away.
And that was it hoax? Would it considered a hoax?
Yeah, that was a hoax. Yeah. Yeah, it was a hoax. I mean, there's been some very famous, one was those, there were some girls.
Oh, yeah, I heard about them.
That, Do you just mean generally girls?
Yeah, I've heard of them. Girls that become women.
No. They're, when I say girls, they were school age girls that went into the woods, and like they carefully cut these fairies out of a book.
Oh, I remember that one. Yeah, those
and
are really.
They, and then they were smart. They told their parents they had met some fairies, and their parents were like, "Yeah, sure." They're like,
"Yeah,
can we have a camera to prove it?" And then like. Went out there and they had pictures of these fairies and the pictures came out pretty damn good.
They're good. Are they photos that they had or did they have photos on photos or was it cardboard cutouts? I can't remember.
They cut out these pictures of these fairies and took them into the woods.
Yeah, see this again.
And then these photos came out and people were like, well, here we are. Finally, we get some proof.
Yeah, this is disclosure.
And then some, it went way, it was far up there.
Yeah, I got to see.
And,
but they are like, let me see.
I mean, I don't know. That looks pretty real.
It does look pretty real because you luckily have a film that's kind of blurry, so you can't tell
right. It's old photography. Yeah. And
damn, that's the best time to be in special effects because you're like, fucking, this is just a cardboard cutout, and you think it's a monster.
Yeah, plus, people didn't know about special effects and foreground and background. Right, yeah. So, like, back then, like, you take a picture of a fish, You'd be, you know, you're doing like the Statue of Liberty force perspective. Trick. Yeah, you'd be like holding this fish and it looks like it's 6 feet.
That's the best time to be a fisherman.
So then somebody recognized the fairy cutouts from the book. They're like, I think that's from this book I have. They were like,
called Fairy Cutouts.
Yeah. But it was easy to fake a picture back then.
Yes.
The more modern ones from the 70s. And these all have come under pretty good scrutiny, and I think they've been convincing enough that there are still legitimate scientific communities that say we're not going to rule it out.
Right. There's a good possibility something exists there, but these are not actually pieces of evidence.
Yeah, they're not. Yeah, we do not have evidence. And in fact, the most recent, when I say most recent, I mean like a couple days ago, search, very interesting. They found, with very advanced sonar, they found a shape on the bottom of Loch Ness that looked and was the same shape as what the stereotypical Loch Ness
was. Oh, really?
Elongated neck, fins, really? Big body, kind of like a dinosaur.
But it was skeleton.
No.
Oh, no.
No.
Oh.
It turned out to be a movie prop of the Loch Ness monster that had sunk to the bottom.
That's great.
So that ended not well. And then at one point, they found some sounds. They had some crazy sounds they were hearing. And stuff? Yeah.
Oh, like whalish.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, as typically goes, their audio recording was not set up yet, and so they did not record it. They just recorded on it. Why aren't you just recording?
Why are
you going out on
the... I think the button should be taped together. Turn it on and
it starts... Default is on.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So
that's...
I was a little disappointed in that. They didn't... The search ended with nothing conclusive. Mm. But in listening to the people... and I think I have a quote from one of them. People really went, it's a matter of faith. Like, I come here because I genuinely believe that there is something in this water, something that is unknown. Mm-hmm. I mean, in fairness, Loch Ness is extremely deep.
So deep. It's crazy deep. Yeah.
It has more, if you take every lake in England and Wales, mm-hmm. Loch Ness has more water than all of them combined.
Wow.
That's how deep it is. Now, it's not a big lake. It's just phenomenally
like a big crevasse,
deep.
Yeah.
And it's very cold water, mm-hmm. very dark. And those are the kind of ocean-like conditions that at least allow your imagination to sort of run wild and say, well, how do you really know? Well, and many Nessie aficionados will say, well, we're never really going to know unless...
Right.
One washes up on shore.
Right, which I don't know how that would work unless it seems like we just sink to the bottom immediately.
Yeah, how would it wash up on...
Yeah.
I mean, whales...
That's true.
I mean...
I think you need more... There's not much motion in the lock, though.
Unless somebody sees it.
I'm talking like... It rides it into shore.
I mean, or just like amateur video of just of sightseeing boat, and it's all of a sudden like, you know, that's it.
Yeah.
30 people, different views of the camera.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But in any case, I mean, I think the people that go, I think that's the interesting part to me, is that why do people go? And the people that, I mean, obviously, like we said with tourism, like the Loch Ness Monster brings in an insane amount of money every year.
Right.
To this area.
I have a shirt from there.
So there is an incentive for people who live off the tourism industry to allow the myth to persist, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
But there's something else I think that's going on, and that's where I think science comes in and it gets very, very interesting.
Okay.
Because the science behind Loch Ness involves a mental, I don't know what the right phrase for it is, a mental phenomena called pareidolia.
Pareidolia?
Pareidolia.
Pareidia. Is it Spanish?
It's spelled very weird.
I've always heard it pronounced pareidia.
Well, I...
Interesting.
Pareidolia.
Interesting.
I like, you know, you can go like a pronunciation.com. Yeah. I went to
and
that.
And they play it?
Pareidolia.
Interesting.
And I wrote it out. Shane's looking at my notes.
I know. I see it. Yeah, yeah. Wild.
Pareidolia.
I believe you.
Pareidolia is a is a mental process that we all do, somewhat unconsciously, but we do it.
Yeah.
And probably the most famous or the most popular sort of iteration of it is when you're looking at clouds and you see a shape or a face, that's the act of pareidolia happening. Yeah. Right.
See what you see, all types of things.
Well, it is the brain's attempt to organize things into certain patterns and shapes, particularly faces. That is the, and that's why, like, you know, you might be walking along the street and you might see some, you know, like a circle with some slots in it, and you see an eyes and a mouth.
Oh, right.
That's pareidolia. You might, you know, see a pizza with pepperoni on it, and somehow the pepperonis are organized. You're like, oh, it looks like a face. You might look up at the clouds. You might be drifting through a canyon with rock walls, and as you look up in the rock walls, you're like, oh, check it out. You see how that kind of looks like a...
Yeah.
And you'll see a face. And that's...
So, like, Mount Rushmore isn't actually...
No, that's faces. Not... That, no, that, if you...
just a natural formation?
Yeah, it's natural.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it just happened to naturally form.
Wow, amazing.
Like, four present. I had a bit. It's just history bits are really hard sometimes.
Yeah, because people are dumb.
Well, right. And when I say, like, Teddy Roosevelt isn't even the best Roosevelt.
Right.
People get real. People that know history are like, well, that's because Franklin wasn't around when they first authored it.
Right. And you're like, oh, so you mean people are smart. And that's why they don't
like it. Or they're incredibly stupid. Yeah, yeah. And they're, you know, I mean.
I fall in between. I'm like, I've heard of a Roosevelt. And then I laugh because I'm like, I should look like I know this one.
I think they should change. I think they should. I think they should update Mount Rushmore.
They should just put it back to rock. It's like a sacred place, and they put these idiots up there.
I think it'd be. I mean, okay. First of all, I don't think this would be awesome. But if Trump were to get reelected, I think it would be awesome if he carved himself into Mount Rushmore.
Or what about the Georgia one? Because everyone hates that one now.
Stone Mountain.
Yeah. Because that's all like Confederate guys, right? They're like, we can't get rid of this because this is like,
it would be. Look, I'm not saying further desecration.
Of
American land is funny.
No,
what I'm saying is, is that it would be hilarious because the mental meltdown that would occur for certain people.
Yeah,
which is the only thing that's amusing to me about
Trump. The Schadenfreude.
It's just like the every time he does something and people flip out, and I'm like, why are you, like, this is who he is, right, and this is what people love about
him. Yeah, yeah.
I don't love it, but the way that it's what it is to me is it's like the people that boo at professional wrestling.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm like,
that's why you're here, dude.
You are here to see this, and you're genuinely booing like you hate. Know that's a character playing a villain, and you are emotionally upset.
Yeah.
You are mad at theater right now.
Man.
And Donald Trump is clearly theater. And then people are like, oh, Church Sale. But you're just like, okay, you are giving him exactly what he wants.
Yeah.
As long as you hate him, you will watch him.
Yeah, absolutely.
So back to pareidolia, you know, the idea behind it, at least from an evolutionary standpoint, is that infants seem to have an affinity for faces that is probably primal, meaning it derives from the primate side of us. Most primates seem to have, or at least to some degree, perform the act of pareidolia. We as primates put a level of importance to recognizing faces. And it's probably a survival tactic that's very, very ingrained within our being. But that's why infants are fascinated with humans. They will recognize a human face very, very early on. It's why you can look at a baby and it will see a face and it will kind of be fascinated by it.
Is that why they go for breasts? Because they look like two eyes.
No, it's the smell of milk.
Oh, man, that's crazy. That, oh, we did. Right? Yeah, yeah, that's such
smell,
a strong
they
smell.
Smell the milk.
Wild.
But wow. It's very important to our survival, as or at least it was as a species. But it's incredible to me, and I'm going to pivot to show you how powerful it is, because in when was this? 2007, maybe?
Okay.
A guy found a Cheeto, and it looked like a gorilla, and he put it on eBay mm-hmm. for sale as an auction. Uh-huh. And he said it looked like that that Harambe.
Oh, yeah, Harambe. Remember yeah. Harambe? I do, yeah.
And I'm going to show you the Cheeto here.
Okay, let me see. We'll post it on that.
Right there.
Oh, that's, I mean, that's pretty fucking good. I mean, that looks like Harambe.
I mean, it does.
I mean, look at the, yeah. But if you flip it upside down, you'd be like, nope, that's nope, a, it looks like that's a chicken, snork or something.
A chicken wing right there.
Oh, yeah.
It's like mm-hmm. a drumstick.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
But he sold that on eBay for $999,000.
Yeah, my man. American dream right there.
Yeah, that's.
That's why you look at all of the foods you get and be like, who's this look like?
I'm ready to just start buying Cheetos,
I know.
Dumping them out,
yeah,
getting high as I can get and being yeah. like, look at this.
Yeah, or you just do Google reverse image search and be like, what does this look like? Mm. Just take a photo of it and then just reverse image search it, and they'll be like.
Yeah, somebody sold another, found something. Oh, I mean, people find bread with the face of Jesus on
it. Oh, I sold bread with the face of Obama on an art show. I made it.
You made it?
Yeah, I sold it. It was like an inaugural art show. And man, I like made to toast with Obama's face
how to
on
toast. Do you know how to toast with a face on?
That's
it?
What I did. Yeah, I definitely know.
Well, then we should definitely be selling this on eBay and being like,
yeah,
the face of Trump's mugshot,
dude,
as toast right. would sell for a ton of money.
I'm gonna do it today,
dude. I get a cut.
You absolutely get 50-50.
All right. Well, let's
okay.
Make
no.
A,
60-40.
We got to pretend it's a
art.
Real thing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And be like, hey, I made toast this morning.
Yeah.
You're not going to believe this.
And I can Photoshop it to where I like the house doesn't look like mine. So people, you know, like maybe like, or maybe it should be over a campfire. You got to really target the audience.
No, I think you just be like, I don't even like Trump, but this is a sign.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Be
it's
honest.
A sign.
Be like,
oh, yeah.
Sign.
Just a sign.
I mean, yeah. I might vote for the guy now. And yeah. say that, and then someone's like somebody's gonna buy that thing
yeah.
for $100,000.
You're correct, and then we'll donate some of the proceeds to our liberal-minded cause.
We'll donate it to families in need,
yes.
Starting with the Smith and Scranton families.
Yes, because we are both pretty broke right now.
Okay, so yeah, you know what's funny is that he shipped the $99,000 Cheeto standard shipping.
Oh, my God, really?
I'd be a little pissed.
Yeah.
I'd be like, brother, you're going to bubble wrap that.
For sure,
that dude. Thing, like, I would have put it, I would ask for it to be put in, like, a Pelican case.
Yeah, something, and then, or maybe you do, you remember, did you ever do egg drop with Odyssey of the Mind?
Yeah.
Yeah, just figure out how to egg drop a Cheeto that looks like Harambe.
Mm.
Yeah, that should be the test in school nowadays. And they're like, people still drop eggs? And you're like, it was a thing back in the day. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
because dropping eggs is like a 1940s thing. Why are we still doing it?
Yeah, we did have some. We did the egg drop experiment. Did you ever do the bridge span experiment
yeah, mm-hmm.
too, where you see how much weight your bridge?
Yeah,
mine broke immediately.
Yeah,
F.
I think mine did too, because I was like, this one's just for motorcycles, and it was just toothpicks all the way across. Mm-hmm. They're like, that's not. Sustainable for anybody. I was like, I see that now. Thank you.
Yeah, I was really half-assed those like.
Oh yeah.
The kids who took it too seriously. Like, clearly your dad's an engineer.
Yeah, exactly.
He got into it with you.
Yes.
I don't have a father. I'm not.
Yeah. No.
What is my mom gonna do?
Yeah. And like, what am I gonna? Maybe you know. Maybe if we had done that, we'd be in a different place.
Yeah. Maybe
we'd have a weird engineering podcast.
I mean, yeah. It's just, I just felt bad because it's like, look, I. Maybe have an experiment where we make daiquiris and my mom can help me.
Yeah, that right? one sounds good, right?
I mean, but not this building stuff.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Yeah. My neighbor growing up was the Pinewood Derby.
Oh, hell yes.
Like, national champion.
Amazing.
which is a complicated way of saying his father was national champion.
Yeah, and quite the woodworker.
And they had a full-on track over there, and they had dozens of cars.
Time trials on their own. And
they were like, hey, bring your car over, we're going to race. And like, I'm like, this is boring. I'm just getting my ass whooped.
Yeah. Should we use the one that's made specifically for rain or for when we're closer to the moon?
Yeah, and, you know, they're putting grass. Dude, it was just like, dude, this is not fun. I'm out of here.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What does all this have to do with Loch Ness Monster repair? But I just want to make sure that we're on the same page, meaning you, the audience, that pareidolia is this mental phenomena that we create order and shapes out of things that are not.
Yes.
Right?
I mean,
a cloud, there's probably not a face in the cloud, but you see a face.
Absolutely.
In the cloud.
Absolutely.
It's not just with our eyes, by the way. It does it with sounds.
Really? Yes. Oh, yeah, because we think we hear our name sometimes.
You hear stuff.
Yeah.
It happens with smells. Oftentimes, like, you will smell something and your brain will try to make that a familiar smell. It goes back to evolution. What your brain is trying to do is create a fight or flight. Like, am I safe or am I in danger?
Oh, right. So it takes the knowledge it has, pieces it together to form a new picture based on what it has, and it says, is this familiar enough to feel okay?
Yes. Or if not, it will smell acrid. You know, smell bad. You'll be like, what does that smell? It sounds seems dangerous.
Yeah,
right? Faces too, like, you know, children get very, very quickly learn whether faces are safe, are they happy. We recognize emotions very quickly. It's all part of our survival. But there is a field of science that refers to pareidolia as matrixing, as in creating a reality. And this is where I think things get very interesting to me, because the best way that I've heard it described is that if you think about the alphabet, let's take the letter A. You know, the letter A, which you learn as a kid in school, we have 26 letters in our alphabet. We have two versions of each letter. But then you learn to write those letters. Even if you don't write them, if you just think about the letter A in a computer program like Microsoft Word or whatever, there's thousands of fonts for the letter A?
Yeah, bazillions probably.
Yeah, I mean, like, people are coming up with new fonts every day.
Yeah, stop it, guys. I just give me 10. That's all I want to use. Yeah. Just give me 10.
But every time you see the letter A, that doesn't matter whether it's Times New Roman or Arial, and as long as it's not like Wingdings or something nuts. The
best one.
And also with handwriting, when you see someone's handwriting, your brain uses pareidolia to organize what you see.
Interesting.
Into the letter A.
Okay.
If it did not, if you were not able to do this, every font would be a different language. Every handwriting would be a different language, because you would see it and your brain would not be able to sort of recognize the general. It takes the bad ink, you know. It takes like, you see an A and you're like, that's an A. You have that concept in your head of, this is the letter A. And then with that, over the years, right, from the time you're very young, we look at A as this phonetic alphabet that indicates a certain sound, the A or A, the long A, the short A. And so language sort of develops as in conjunction with this sort of idea of pareidolia.
Do you think that our brains making sense of different shaped A's, or everything in general, is just our brain's way of going, that's good enough, right? Because it's like, that doesn't quite look like that one, but I'll accept that this is also it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it's this is not Nissin ramen. It's something else, but it's still ramen.
Yeah. Yeah. Know? I think that, the answer to that question is yes.
Brains are lazy. I tell you.
Well, no, because go back to, the face thing.
Yeah.
Like we have to evolve as primates to recognize a face, but also quickly determine, because we are the most emotional animals that we know about. Mm-hmm. And I have to be able to look at your face and be really good about determining whether you're happy, sad, danger, right, frustrated, anger.
Yeah. Right.
And with A's, like your brain and like, so the idea is that we see faces is because it's better to see faces when there's not one than there is to miss one and there be one.
Oh, interesting.
Because that's very dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah, because they can come after you.
So we are more apt. That's why, for example, I mean, you can probably seen it on TikTok or some other, like, people will show you words like STRMSRG, and people will be like, storm surge. And you will see storm surge, even though there's no O in there.
Isn't that like a right-wing thing?
Is that a right?
Oh, I don't know. Something surge was. I don't know.
Storm surge.
I was like, what videos are you watching?
Storm.
Like,
no, it, you can drop letters out of words, and you still see it, and you'll just be like, oh, I can still read that.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, that's pareidolia. Because our brain is saying, yeah, it's not quite there, but I need to get there because I want you to be able to read, because it could be very valuable information that's going to help you survive.
So in a sense, speed reading is pareidolia. Because when you speed read, you read the first few letters and the last few letters, and you let everything else.
You kind of let everything else kind of just slip away, and you just sort of, right.
Yeah, you just go back and
pareidolia
forth.
Pareidolia allows you to look at something and immediately recognize the shape. It organizes our reality into familiar patterns.
Okay.
Okay. So like far, this. We're so good, right?
I like this as well.
Now, if you take that a step further, and this is where things get weird, you know, if you think about the letters C-A-T and everything we just talked about, now we read that and we say...
Cat, if cat. You didn't know, yeah.
And you know, we recognize the letters, and then those letters together make the word cat, but they also invoke within us this idea of a cat, this image of a cat that you might see. You see this thing, and you're like, cat, right? Mm-hmm. Now, it might be bigger, it might be smaller. There's all different shapes and sizes to cat, but we're like, that's a cat. I recognize the cat. Now, we all think intuitively that the cat, the actual physical object, the collection of matter that walks around or lays there and purrs or whatever that is, that's the real thing.
Yeah.
The word is just a sort of representation of. This theory says, no, it's exactly the opposite.
Oh, no.
The collection of matter isn't organized and real until we create the language which allows us to express it.
Oh, I buy into this 100%. Because how many things don't exist in our lives until we define what they are and give it a name?
Exactly.
Like, how do you describe something that has no name?
Yeah, exactly. Well, there is no thing without
the exactly,
word.
Yeah.
The word makes it real, because the word, in a sense, is the final process of this organization of chaos into a thing that we can then apply to the world.
Which is, it's very similar to the idea of biocentrism, those books I was reading. Just basically, like, it exists because you are observing it and creating it with those observations. It's a weird...
That's exactly right.
Yeah, it's like
that's,
it doesn't exist until you put attention to
it. Which is fascinating, because if you start really going down this rabbit hole, then reality is something, and we've said this many times on this podcast, reality is something that our mind is constantly creating. Mm-hmm. So then you start thinking about things like, there was an archaeologist that we discussed on the pod one time who found the repetition of certain symbols across multiple cultures and caves over time for thousands of years. Now, we look at those symbols, and we have, we call them certain things, red cross, or the hand symbol. This is the triangle. The people of that day, those symbols almost assuredly were the representation of a different set of information and organization. So they didn't see Red Cross hands. They saw an idea communicated that was in fact real. Right?
So basically, if we go back to our Homo Naledi episode, the scratches on the walls, if you've seen the documentary, the scratches on the walls represented, I don't know what it represented, but it was also reflected in a cave somewhere else. So you're saying that those things were two different ideas represented in the same way.
I'm saying that we, our process, right, our brains see lines scratched into a wall. That's not even what they saw. They didn't see that because we see lines. They saw communication. They saw a word, a phrase that invoked, right?
The context doesn't exist.
If you scratch the word cat into the walls of a cave.
Like, look at those crazy lines.
People, yes. Thousands of years later, people would say, what does that even mean?
Yeah.
Right? And if they saw that same, it would look like a symbol to them. C, an A, and a T.
But what do those mean?
They'd be like, they're not seeing it as a C, an A, or a T.
Right.
They may not even have the concept of a cat at that point because cats may not even exist in the way that we think of them existing now as word and thing.
That's why I draw my words, like hieroglyphics, which explains why I can't get a job. My resume is beautiful.
Beautiful resume.
A lot of pictures.
I just turned it to Wingdings. Bold face. Bold Wingdings is my resume. I'm gonna apply for a job and put my resume in Wingdings. We got your resume. Yeah. We can't read it. I'm like, that's because you don't know the code.
Man, that's fun. I like that.
The point that I'm trying to gather is that when we think of our reality, what we have to understand in this theory is that that reality is presented to you as a series of words and ideas to organize everything that your senses take in. And that has nothing to do with actual reality. So when 1933, two people at a Spanish lake say, we saw a large monster on the surface of the lake. That idea enters into the social zeitgeist. Now, when people see a fluttering of water on the lake, they say, I think I saw Locke.
Oh, right.
Yes. Right? Now, is science changing that in such a way that when people see flutterings on the water, they're going to say, well, it can't have been the Loch Ness Monster because that doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
You know, there's a famous sort of theoretical problem, which is the Native Americans never saw Columbus land on their shores because they didn't understand what a boat was like that.
Oh, yeah. I've heard this as a metaphor. I've heard it's been debunked as being an actual thing, but it is a metaphor, but I think it stands true.
I think it does.
There's a documentary about how like certain cultures couldn't see blue for forever.
Right. Yeah. There are things that certain cultures, and whenever I read about like they didn't have this concept, they probably didn't see this.
Yeah.
Like when you know, think about thousands of years before Christ. I could probably just say BC.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I don't need to.
Yeah. BC before Christ.
You know, somebody gets stabbed. You see them dying. Mm-hmm. You probably don't have a concept of like blood volume and blood loss.
Sure.
Things like that. Right.
Or maybe even stabby things, depending on what happened.
Yeah. Right. You may not. Right. And so it might just be like God's, you know, smote him down because that's the way your culture has organized certain things.
Right.
That your brain, it's exactly what your brain sees. Right.
So like if someone stabbed this guy, and they don't understand stabby things or blood loss, they just saw a red eye, if they understand language, don't draw a red eye on somebody.
Exactly.
I see that, and I know that's what happens.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's
crazy.
In some sense, superstition is absolutely real, and our science today will eventually be the next generation superstition. But that's how we've organized in the language that we've provided, the words we've used to, that our brain then takes to make sense of what ultimately is a reality that doesn't exist. It's a matrix. And it's all processed through this thing. Now, on an aside before we get back to Loch Ness, is probably the most fascinating thing that I read in relation to this is that on the autism spectrum, it seems that people that are on the autism spectrum, especially towards the more severe cases, they really struggle with pareidolia.
Oh, interesting.
Both recognizing faces and expressing with their face the range of human emotions that we normally think. They think there's something in the way that they see the world that is not sort of just sort of bound and wrapped up in pareidolia.
Interesting. What would be the benefit of that? What would be the benefit of not having that adaptability to nature?
You know, well, they might be adapting to a nature that's not fully realized yet.
Oh, like we are the ones that don't see it, but they see it.
We might be the chimpanzees who one day are completely distinct from this evolving brain.
Oh, interesting.
That sees the world in a much different way.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
In the sense, does that make sense?
Like absolutely.
This is a brain that functions. I hesitate to say higher level because the reality is that across the autism spectrum, there's just a range of behaviors. But in a different, unique way, it sees the world without the sort of like organizational facets of pareidolia, both the limitations of it, but also the safety of it. Huh. And so it's able without that to interact with the world in a completely different
wild. Okay.
Now that was just something that I read. I thought, oh, that's pretty interesting.
That's interesting, yeah. But wow.
Of course, I always find these things towards the end where I'm like, ugh, this, I don't have to. I want to go back and rewrite the whole episode.
Right. Oh, yeah.
But to go back to Loch Ness, I think that part of why people met this past weekend to search for Loch Ness, because as long as the search is there, as long as the idea exists that there might be a monster, people will see a monster.
Right, yeah, keeps it alive.
It keeps, as long as people think there was one, there is one.
Interesting.
Because the way that our mind works is it sees the information in the way that our culture has taught it to structure it.
Wow, okay.
And as long as there are weird phenomena coming out, people are going to see it, and they're swear they saw a flippered, long-necked, giant monster out of there.
Wild.
And whether they do or do not, in some ways in this world, in this sense, is irrelative, right? Irrelevant. Mm-hmm. Not irrelative. It's irrelevant, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, it doesn't matter what they really see because there's not anything real.
Right.
As long as the idea is there and you can organize the information that your senses take in to conform with those ideas, it is real.
So it's a tulpa.
A tulpa?
Tulpa. We should do an episode on tulpas. Tulpas are like these beings you create from thought. People like fully subscribe to that. They've created this being to do things for them. It's a wild.
That is crazy.
It's a wild fucking thing. But enough people believe it. And if you believe it, you can be it. Who sang that song?
Yeah, you know, there's some people that believe that night terrors, which we've covered, that you're seeing something, but it's because it feels unsafe. Your pareidolia organizes it into a terrifying shape.
Right, whatever that
terrifying shape is in your head, right? But it draws from sort of deep, you know, sort of cultural psyche to present to you what is a scary image.
Interesting. I like this.
Yeah. So, you know, in some sense, the answer is don't trust your eyes, but it's that lack of trust in our eyes that allows mythology and folklore and strange things to exist in the first place. Mm-hmm. That's why they happen in dark, deep, big places.
Yeah.
and bad lighting and all these things. But the persistence of those mythologies allows them to keep being seen. And it's and I find this so fascinating because more and more, you know, we are learning in the quantum physics that we live in that we are really creating reality every day.
Absolutely.
Through a combination of mental processes and then thought control, essentially.
Yeah.
So.
Man, what a world. Yeah, I love stuff like this. I never thought about this in terms of pareidolia with just how it is part of a matrix. That's an interesting thing.
Wild. Yeah. I mean, that's crazy. You know, somebody in 1933 sees something and they report it, and that becomes the idea, which then in some sense shapes how people see future phenomena, which again, the implications of that are very clear, is that you see, right? Mm-hmm. You do not see a reality that is objective. You see a subjective reality that is controlled by your mind and constrained by the culture which you live in.
Which explains why UFOs have changed their shape over the years.
It absolutely does. We've seen the same thing, if you want to say that, or we have not seen it because it wasn't sort of allowed to be seen. But now that it's, so what will happen, we've predicted this, is that in the next decade or so, UFO sightings will go off the charts, right?
Yeah, they're starting to already.
Once the site guy says, well, yeah, UFOs exist, well, then someone's going to have something happen, a gush of wind, a weird sound, and be like, oh, I totally saw a UFO today.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Now they're going as gushes of wind.
Gushes.
Gushes. Yeah. What was that?
But you're going to see something, you know, and you're going to be like, oh, it must have been a UFO.
Yeah.
And then in some cases, it will be a UFO that you're actually, you will be seeing a UAP that you could not have seen before.
Yeah.
Because that's not how your mind organized the information that your eyes saw.
Well, it's almost like it's almost becoming an expert at something. So like, say you're a coffee person or a liquor or bourbon person. You don't taste notes until you start paying attention to those notes.
Absolutely.
Right? And so it's like you have the types of UFOs you could see or types of things that you see in life. Right. The more you pay attention, the more you become aware of it, the more you can appreciate the nuance of it. Otherwise, it's just a blur.
Right. Professional poker players, when they talk about beating people, amateurs, like they know before the cards are before the flop, for example, even comes, what you have based upon, because they're just so used to it.
Yeah.
Right. This guy can't wait to bet these cards.
Yeah. I know this person did this cause they probably have this. And
And a lot of that is we call it instincts, but instincts are just a collection of survival mechanisms that are so important to you that you instinctually recognize things. And if, instinctually, to feed your family, it takes you to be able to spot someone who's bluffing or not.
Yeah,
like that will become ingrained in your pareidolia, where you'll see things. You're like, well, I saw him do this.
Yeah,
you might even watch a videotape and be like, he didn't do anything. And it's like, well, I saw him do it.
Yeah,
because that is how your brain is organized itself to survive.
Yeah, you just
And professionals experts get better and better and better at it.
When I worked retail, it fucking bit me in the ass because I was so good at spotting people that were going to shoplift.
Oh.
And then, like, I was that guy that, like, took offense to it. And they're like, yeah, you got to chill out. You just got to let them take stuff. I'm like, God, I wish I hadn't.
Loss prevention's built into the budget.
I know, but I shouldn't have trained my brain to be like, that's a shoplifter. I should have just not paid attention because I, like, focused so much to be like, oh, I understand that slight twist of a head when they're doing something. Or, you know, I was, like, so focused.
Wow.
It's like a shark, man.
You ever, we caught a shoplifter once who was a compulsive shoplifter.
Oh, yeah.
That's a weird, we should cover that stuff.
Yeah, because it is like gambling, I'm sure.
Yeah, I've heard it's a rush.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you go to any of the r/confession type. People who just are like, I used to steal from this one store for decades.
Oh, damn.
And it's like, well, pay him back.
You're
sitting here writing this. Don't pay him back.
I would steal things like salt and pepper shakers or ashtrays when I was real drunk for bars.
Ashtrays were a big.
Yeah, it may have been the reason Jackpot closed. I stole so many ashtrays.
Well, they didn't just have those cheap black
ashtrays. They had the red, like, melamine ones. Or whatever. Oh, yeah, I only took one. Those were pretty cool.
I stole stuff off bar walls a lot.
Oh, yeah, I never did that.
Neon and cool signs and stuff like that. I mean.
Yeah. Still in your rec room? Still in the...
No, it's no... I think I gave one back, a really nice one. I felt bad. They were not... They were like... Oh, yeah, thanks. It wasn't like a big deal to them. They were like, yeah, this stuff gets stolen all the time.
Oh, really?
I'm the only person that ever brought it back.
That's fun. It's kind of weird. You're weirder.
Yeah, weirder for bringing it back, you know?
The only thing I ever stole that I returned was a book in high school called Stalking the Wild Asparagus.
Very strange book to steal.
I just thought it was so funny. What a great title. And then I returned
it. Why didn't you buy it?
It was a high school library.
Oh, you stole it without checking it out.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not even stealing.
Oh, I brought it back, though.
I mean... Look, we figured out at some point in high school that, like, you just would go to NC State and get a book that had, like, the topic for your paper.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you just steal it.
Oh, shit.
And
that's why school books are $400 a piece.
Yeah. And you're like, who's going to – now the one copy of this in the country is gone.
Yeah.
Damn.
And,
you still got nowadays, it's really hard. I mean, plagiarism's a lot harder today than it was.
Oh,
the beginning of the internet was the heyday of plagiarism.
Oh, absolutely.
It's like that the beginning of paste.
AI, yeah.
That was cut and paste plagiarism.
Yeah.
Nowadays, plagiarism is a little harder.
Yeah, I would think so. There's tools you can to
run
fight
you can run a paper and you'll be like, but that's off the rails.
Yeah, but I mean that just speaks to, like, now we pay attention to plagiarism, so we're able to spot it.
Now that we know that everything that people write is likely from source, people just intuitively think.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you see a picture. I mean, I'm not on the dating apps, but I've heard this story countless times where it's like the guy looked really cute. I reverse image searched his pictures and it popped up and like it's a scam. It's like, but that notion of fake pictures are a real thing.
Yeah.
So now we get better at spotting fake pictures.
Right.
Where early on you didn't. That's the evolution of our pareidolia. You know, as our culture evolves and new ideas, new things, new words, new language, it all shapes how we see the reality that exists.
Yeah. Wow.
And so people in Scotland are like, we want to make sure that as reality progresses, that fluctuations of the surface of this lake continue to be seen as a potential. Right.
Yeah.
So it really is. This is crazy. And people who went to this conference said this, I came here as an act of faith. It genuinely is an act of faith.
Yeah.
It's like, as long as people go to church, there is a God.
Mm-hmm.
As long as people go to Loch Ness and search for that monster, there's a monster.
Yeah.
Like, it's the faith that keeps it real and that allows people to see it, because that's how reality is organized.
Wild.
Crazy stuff.
It is crazy.
This is the weirdest science.
Yeah, it is the weirdest science. You're telling me there's just people out there that are causing us to do this podcast? Crazy. Well,
yeah. Yeah. I mean,
crazy.
But nonetheless, very interesting.
Yeah, I know. And I like this. I think my favorite thing is I was just hoping there'd be more like Men in Black type characters around the Loch Ness, but they'd be wearing plaid, you know? Just
a bit of a kilt.
That's right, a bit of a kilt.
You didn't see nothing,
you
laddie.
You didn't see shit. Yeah, I think that'd be great.
Why don't you run along to your mother, whose name we know, laddie?
Yeah.
Your mother should be safe if you never open your mouth.
Men in kilts.
That's
fun.
The men in kilts.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. All right, yeah, this was fun. I like it. I like it. It still ties into all the Matrix shit we talk about and how it's just, I mean, Matrix was included in this. It's so wild.
Yeah, it
none of this exists, but we're having a good time.
Which is kind of, you know, once you embrace that, then you know, maybe you can shape your reality a little bit. Maybe the Matrix can bend.
I think so.
So, well, that's the weird science.
I like it.
Thank you guys so much for listening. If you're not already, like, subscribe, join us on Patreon or Spotify Premium.
Yeah.
And thanks so much, everyone, for supporting us. For now, this has been the Weird Science Podcast. I'm still Justin.
I'm Shane. Peace.